Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. On the show this week, Steve Bruce says we did okay in 4-1 defeat at Old Trafford. A club in crisis, football cliches provides the template and we tick all the boxes. And fit to wear the shirt, injury hits our number 9 again at the very worst possible time. Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome aboard the good ship, Pod on the Tyne. Feel free to grab a life vest, you're probably going to need it. Joining me, as always, is The Athletic's Newcastle United correspondent Chris Woff and our senior writer, George Colgan. Plenty of time for us to talk about football in a minute, gents, but did anybody do the run yesterday? George, were you running?
Well, I think more accurately, the run did me yesterday.
But, yes.
But yes, I did it. It was great to be back. It was different this year, obviously, not ending in Shields, and look forward to getting back to the seaside next year. But yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was it's the best day of the year. And there is a small football correlation, if you like. Whenever I do the Great North Run, and you're surrounded by all these people, you know, it's something in a sporting context that we're the best at in the world. It's the biggest half marathon in the world. Mm. It's the best half marathon in the world. It's a bucket list event. It was the first mass participation event like this to go past a million participants. And, you know, we're the best at it. So why can't we aspire to be the best at other things? Why can't we aspire to be the best at football?
Absolutely.
Why can't we aspire to be quite good at it? Because we've shown we've got a willing audience. We've got we've got good facilities. You know, it can be done. It needs nurturing. It needs love. It needs investment.
It does.
And, you know, I know that at Great Run, they're always talking about, it's not just about, oh, we're the best, how great we are. It's all about, how can we stay here? How can we continue being number one? What can we do? You know, how do we still exist in 50 years' time? And anyway, We can do it. I'm aching all over, but I'm very happy to be part of that.
Well, well done, George, and congratulations. How was your time? Was it any good?
It was a lot slower than my best. I did 1:51. That's all right.
I'd still be out there now if I did it, to be honest.
I'm still nursing an injury that I got when running for the first and only time with Chris, when we were doing the football, what was it called, Chris? The football run?
I can't remember. It was my first ever 10K, and I managed to break George on it. So it's a big achievement.
And really. I fell apart running past St James's Park, which feels appropriate.
It's very apt, isn't it?
My left knee popped out and popped back in again. I briefly dislocated it, and it's been very painful. So 10 miles yesterday. I felt that again, and so I'm kind of always, I always feel of feel I always think of Chris when I'm in pain.
Don't we all? Well, George, I would say as well, it will be great to have the run back, finishing at South Shields again next year, because I was down on the seafront in South Shields yesterday afternoon and it was like a ghost town, and South Shields needs that to come back. It's the first time ever since the run started that it hasn't finished in South Shields, so we're desperate to get it back next year. The town really needs it, so
yeah,
it'll be great.
The run is where it ends. It follows the course of the river, you know, mm-hmm. That's the point of it. It's from the river to the sea, and they've already announced it'll be back there next year, so it should be. But, you know, the alternative to that this year was not having the run at all. They had to do that because we all know that the transport is is chaos at the coast. And when they planned it and when they were organising it, they couldn't get insurance in case it got called off, in case we had sort of lockdown restrictions back in place again. And so it was the only way you could do it. It brings in tens of millions of pounds to the region. It raises 25 million quid for charities. And, yep. You know, we can't afford not to have that. But running down to the sea, thinking you've finished, then going through that longest mile
down Marsden Bank
in miles. Yeah. Oh, God. But being roared on by...
That's amazing.
Shields people, it's absolutely such a huge part of the run, and I missed looking out to sea yesterday. It was very handy being able to walk home afterwards, but no, it was a one-off. It was great to be part of a one-off, but it'll be back at Shields next year, and as it should be.
Lovely stuff. Chris, how are you doing? You well?
Good, thank you. Yes, so yesterday I was
no running for you this weekend. No running.
I was going to go down to the end of it, but I ended up having to do a bit of work. I helped David Ornstein with his column. So what we decided was that we were going to try and see the Red Arrows going, obviously the iconic, flying over the Tyne Bridge. So we're currently staying at Alice's parents because we're in the process of trying to buy a house. And so Alice said, oh yeah, you know, if we go in the back garden, we'll be able to see them flying over. So rush out, and I'm stood there and sort of looking up, and then you can just hear them. Obviously, you hear them coming, and I just can't see anything to do with these red. Nothing at all for the red. I was just, we'll catch them when we come back. So then, obviously, wait outside 2 minutes. Then just hear this noise again. Don't see them at all. To which we then found out later on, having spoken to our parents, that they come out the back way, which is where we went for the Sunday Air Show, but you've got to be out the other side of the house to see them for the Great North Run. So you've stood and completely missed, which is quite an achievement to be able to miss the Red Arrows flying across, but that's what we did. We heard them, but I did not see them. So
something wonderfully hapless about that story.
Well, in typical Newcastle United style, you were well out of position, Chris. That's what's happened there.
Quite.
Well done. Oh, man. Anyway, before we get on to the football and all that other nonsense, The Athletic are still offering 33% off new subscriptions to podcast listeners. So get yourself to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to take advantage of this special offer. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod.
Come on, you Maggies.
Manchester United 4, Newcastle United 1. Let's talk football first. Did we, as our manager, and to be fair, a few of the neutral observers seem to be suggesting, did we actually play quite well at Old Trafford, Chris? What do you think?
Yes, certainly for two-thirds of the game, at the very least, I thought Newcastle... they certainly played better than I thought they would. They frustrated Manchester United. They restricted the opportunities in the first half. They let them have a lot of the ball, but Manchester United didn't do very much with it. And on the break, Newcastle offered a threat. And actually, when in the first 15 minutes of the second half, both before and after, Javier Manquillo equalised with a brilliant counter-attacking move, Newcastle
fantastic.
Looked like the more likely to score at that point as well. Joe Linton should have scored. Sam Maximan and Almiron and Joe Linton himself, to be fair, on the break, were all very effective. But in the end, Newcastle lost 4-1, which is sort of a similar result to what they've had at Old Trafford in recent years. And I suppose the issue with the... Because Steve Bruce came out afterwards and said there's a lot of positives to take. And to an extent, maybe there was, but... How many times have we heard that in recent weeks? And second of all, if you can afford to go to Old Trafford and play reasonably well and lose, if you manage to beat Southampton at home, if you manage to get a positive result against West Ham at home, if you manage to get a positive result against Aston Villa away. But if you come into to this game, the fourth game of the season, with only 1 point on the board, you can't afford to lose 4-1 and now conceded 12 goals in four matches. That is the issue. So as positive as maybe it was just in the isolation of the game, unfortunately, Newcastle can't afford for just as positive. Newcastle United need wins now.
Absolutely. And I mean, we talked about that leaky defence before, haven't we? And George, if you're going to rely on playing counter-attacking football, that defence has to be rock solid, doesn't it?
Yes, and it hasn't been, and there's been too much chopping and changing, I think. And you can, we've been saying this from the start that it looks very sort of uncomfortable, the defence, and you know you need to have that reassurance throughout it, because you can sort of see the nervousness rippling through it, and you know I do feel a measure of sympathy for Freddie Woodman, the position that he's in, because he hasn't had. A settled, you know, back line in front of him, and you know you look to your keeper to sort of inspire confidence. That's not happening. But then he's also kind of getting suspect protection as well. And yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, I think we can see some sort of differences. I mean, it's very early days. We're only four league games into it, but we can see that Newcastle are shooting more. I mean, both mm-hmm. on and off yeah. target than they did at this point last season. I mean, it's quite noticeable that uptick. In terms of possession, it's more or less exactly the same as it was this time last season, but they're conceding way more goals. And I mean, those are very kind of basic metrics I'm talking about, but something's not working. They are finding a way of creating more chances, which is a positive, but that's no use if you're conceding in the way that they, you know, in the way that they are. They're just going to lose. They're going to carry on losing. And so, you know, there needs to be some sense of security at the back. It's just not there. That's the really alarming thing for me.
I mean, when you say that, George, so at the minute Newcastle have conceded 12 goals in four games. If you so that's an average of 3 goals a game. Yes, one of them was against Manchester United, but the other three, it's not like they've played Man City, Chelsea and Liverpool. So at the minute Newcastle have an average 4 goals to be able to win a game. They've scored twice in 2 games at home and have only taken a point from those 2 games.
That is
concerning.
Yeah, and this time last season they played West Ham like they have done this season. They played Brighton and Spurs. I suppose you could say that was an equivalent to Manchester United and Burnley. And they've had the same amount of possession. They've scored almost the same amount of goals. It's like 5 compared to 6. But the fact that, you know, so they're not converting their chances into goals, which is one thing that's worrying. And you can't see that getting any better anytime soon with Callum Wilson injured, who we'll come on to talk about. But they are absolutely leaking goals left, right, and centre. And you know, I totally agree with Chris. I mean, from that, you know, I listened to the match and I watched highlights and I watched sort of extended highlights on NUFC TV. And I don't want to use the word encouragement because I think that sort of sends the wrong message. I think for an hour they were in the game and showed great resilience to kind of come back and, you know, were able to hit on the counter-attack and the goal was really good and so on and so forth. My, you know, the other kind of real concern is the way it sort of disintegrates when things do turn. And that has been a hallmark so far this season. It becomes messy.
And last season as well, George.
And last season as well. It becomes messy very quickly. And I think that's the sort of real concern. And by the end of it, for all that people are saying, we did quite well, it's absolutely the score that I think most of us, you know, I would have said 4-0 or 4-1 or something like that before kickoff. I'm not saying I would have been happy with it, but that's kind of what I anticipated. And so all those words like something to build on or encouragement or positives to take and they're irrelevant when you're 19th in the table. They really are. I mean, it's about getting results.
That's right. And Chris, just to touch back on Freddie Woodman there for a minute. You mentioned him before. A couple of errors in the game, you would say, and you know, by his own admission, he said on Instagram that he didn't play very well. You have to be careful with him now, don't you? He needs to be managed well and he needs to have an arm put around him and kind of be guided properly, doesn't he? Do you think he's going to get that from Steve Bruce?
Well, I hope so. I mean, we had the issue last year with the goalkeepers, which when the situation wasn't managed correctly, and obviously Darlow was jettisoned from the side and he knew beforehand that he was going to be, but he didn't find out from the manager about that. He found out through the media, so hopefully isn't going to be a similar situation like that. And obviously with Freddie Woodman still, this is still the start of his Premier League career. It was only his fourth start. I hope that is the case, and I hope that if he is taken out of the team, then it's explained to him why. I think it's a very delicate situation that's into the do, because he wanted to go out on loan, and if he's going to be taken out of the team, he's only going to have played one game after the end of the window, and then if he's taken out of the team, then he's going to be sitting on the bench, but basically between now and January, and might even not even be on the bench once Dubravka comes back. Then that's really going to frustrate him further at a point where he wants to be playing regularly. It's circumstances conspired against the club and against Bruce for that, and it wasn't the decision that they would necessarily have wanted to take Freddie Woodman to be here. But equally, if he's going to be out of the team after four games, then that's in nobody's favour, and particularly if that is his last performance in the Premier League for now against Man United. There were bad mistakes. The first one, obviously, there's quite a late deflection off Clark. He should still save it, but he's set ready for the initial movement. The second one, yes, it goes through his legs, but I still... And he should save it, but I'm not going to be too critical of Freddie Woodman, because the fact that those opportunities were presented, and for the first one in particular, the fact that defenders didn't react. I'm not saying they would have stopped the goal from going in, but it's easy to just pick on Freddie Woodman. Neither the defenders who are around react to the situation either. So it's a collective issue. There's a collective reason why Newcastle lost 4-1 at Man United. He's not, as George said, the defenders in front of him keep changing. He had a defensive midfielder as a right centre-back this time. He had a right wing-back who hadn't played all season, suddenly comes in and plays alongside. So it's Hayden and Manquillo there. The two of them rarely played together. You could see that for the second goal, lack of understanding between the two of them, and so it just keeps chopping and changing in front of him, and that can't help for someone who was his first time he's playing at Old Trafford for Newcastle in the Premier League.
Looking at the other end of the pitch as well, George, slightly concerned. We scored the goal from an unlikely source, Javi Manquillo. The counter-attacking was really good at times in the game, and I think Miguel Almirón probably had his best game of the season so far. But there was a very big Callum Wilson-shaped hole in that attack, wasn't there, George?
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's one of those problems that we're all familiar with, Taylor, isn't it? You know, it's been great having Callum Wilson in the side, and you know what you're going to get. You know that if Newcastle get the ball in the right places, that he'll be there to take chances. And without him there, there just isn't that same incisive attitude. There isn't the same instinct to get into the six-yard box. And, you know, Newcastle just look a completely different team without him. And, the concern is the longer he's out for, the more difficult it'll be. It was great to see Almirón, you know, back playing in that way that we know he can, dragging the team up the pitch. That's so important, but doing it in a way that looked more effective. And yeah, there were moments in the game where Newcastle looked a proper threat on the break.
Yeah.
But it's all very well being a threat. You've got to convert that threat. And that, you know, that is a frailty that they've had for a long time. And when Wilson's not there, they just don't look like the same team. So yeah, so again, you know, you can look for kind of encouraging signs, but it's not much use if that encouragement isn't converted, and it has to be. I mean, when you look at where we are on the table.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So we emerged from 90 minutes at Old Trafford with some credit, even if defeat was inevitable, as predicted. But just when you thought we might be praising Almirón, Manquillo and the rest for at least putting up a fight, the headlines were suddenly all about off-the-pitch matters again, and another ill-judged outburst from our manager. The Chronicle's Lee Ryder asked him if there was any truth in the rumours he'd taken a holiday during the international break and how that had affected the team's preparation for the Man United game. And Steve Bruce took exception to that line of questioning.
Well, I think I really have to answer that to you, Lee. That's what the fans are asking, aren't they? We trained all week. We're in every day. We were in every day this week where preparation was meticulous. Let me tell you, there's nothing more in preparation. What was I supposed to do? We're six of them away. But preparation was fine, absolutely fine. We've been in all week. You could see the game plan of what we worked to. To answer questions like that is typical of a question that I'll get off you and the newspaper, if I'm being brutally honest. That's why they're the way they are. The way you are in your negativity constantly in your newspaper.
Well, there we go, Chris. He doesn't like it, does he? He doesn't like being called out like that.
No, it was a bit of a puzzling press conference. I mean, obviously, at the minute they're over Zoom, bafflingly. That's not just a Newcastle United thing. That's a Premier League-wide thing. Despite, obviously, basically every other restriction in Premier League stadia, there was 70-odd thousand at Old Trafford, and yet, we've got to do the press conference on Zoom. And the Wi-Fi kept coming and going, and... I asked the first question over Zoom, which was about Newcastle's conceding so many goals and if he was alarmed by that and what they're actually doing to address it, because he's something he's kept talking about. I was then, basically the Wi-Fi then kicked me out of the Zoom call. I then came back in to one of my colleagues, Miles Staff. I'd asked about the fact that some Newcastle fans had turned on Bruce again during the game. They'd stuck by the team for most of the game, but then once the third goal went in, there were chants of... we want Bruce out and various things. There was also a banner held up about that, and Steve Bruce replied with fair enough to a certain extent, because what can he say to that? What can I say to that? I'm delighted. I can't comment on that. And then the final question was basically about this question that Lee Ryder asked, which was about, which a lot of fans have been asking about, is that that's the way that he worded the question. A lot of fans have been asking whether Bruce had gone on holiday to Portugal over the international break. There'd obviously been photos circulating on social media and also preparation for the game. And then Bruce made it both personal and about the local media, but also the final line about that's why they, referencing the fans, are the way they are, the way you are, your negativity in your newspaper, the insinuation from that being that fans, rather than having made their own mind up, having watched the performances and the transfer window going as it was and various other things, that basically the only reason that they may be reacting negatively towards the head coach is because of what has been written about him or said about him elsewhere, and that has riled a lot of supporters, understandably. It just felt like a sort of end of days press conference. I mean, we said this obviously after Brighton in March, and he's still here, but it did feel like, it just felt like when it reaches that stage, and his relationship with the media basically has broken down ever since Newcastle lost to Brentford in the League Cup last December. It really hasn't recovered. It broke almost to an irreparable stage. I think in January there was a little bit maybe of thorn of tensions, but since after this, I think it's difficult to see how bridges are necessarily going to be built in the short term. More importantly, even so, with fans, given how they may react on Friday if Newcastle fall behind against Leeds.
This is the thing, though, George, isn't it? It seems like every time that he gets some sympathy for being burned by the owner for whatever reason, Steve Bruce, he responds by self-immolating, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, the media are an easy target, always have been, and it's sort of, you know, it's one of the stages that managers kind of always go through. But it's not, you know, it's not Lee Ryder's fault that Newcastle are 19th in the table and so on and so forth. And I do think that when you're in that kind of position, the optics of going away on holiday do not look great, because, you know, what fans want to think or want to see is that everyone's knuckling down, trying to put things right. I mean, we know how stressful this is as a business, and we know that things are difficult. I would never sort of deny people the opportunity to have time off, because it's very, very important, and I would always take my, you know, time off and things like that. But it just doesn't look great, and I don't think it was an unreasonable question to ask by any stretch of the imagination, and I didn't think there was any call for the response like that. I thought the response was outrageous, really, and you know, it's sort of unnecessary. You know, the idea that fans aren't capable of seeing seeing what performances are like and what results are like for themselves, and need anybody in the media to interpret it for them is pretty offensive. And I would probably argue that you know, if anything, it's been the other way around. I mean, I would sort of say that, you know, it's been supporters leading the criticism and media reflecting that, and some supporters would argue that the media haven't been reflecting it enough. And so, you know, it kind of comes across as, it came across as kind of very irritable and unnecessary. You know, your team's lost. No one expects the manager to be happy about that. No one expects him to be satisfied with that. But what I would prefer to see him do is, you know, acknowledge. I mean, what can he say about people chanting about him? Well, acknowledging the league position, acknowledging what a poor start it's been, acknowledging how poor results have been, even if he thinks, you know, Newcastle haven't deserved those results, and, you know, promising to turn it round or try and turn it round. That's what I want to hear, as opposed to sort of, and saying that, you know, people who pay their money to travel all the way to Old Trafford are 100% within their rights to say what they want and act as they want. And I would, you know, I'd want him to say that. I don't think it's difficult to say those things. Whether that, you know, whether that would be enough for people is debatable, of course. But it's perfectly reasonable to respond to things like that without being antagonistic. And it's, you know, Chris has written an excellent piece, which is up on The Athletic at the moment. And it you know, the tone of Chris's piece is that it feels like Steve Bruce is fighting battles on all fronts at the moment, and that he's losing all of them. And sort of, you know, I'm sure he feels like he's under siege, but at the same time, sort of antagonising everybody and everything.
He has to own it though, George, doesn't he? He needs to own it.
Yeah, I think so.
He has to.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we'd actually be a little bit more sympathetic towards him if he did own it. You know, I think batting it away every time and you know, turning on the press and stuff like that isn't helping his cause at all.
Well, I also think, I mean, the holiday question, there was a lot on social media about it, and it may have even been asked in the pre-match press conference on Friday, but we're still in this situation where I think there's four questions taken from written media on Friday, one of which was about the player who seemed to be the only player playing on Saturday, if all of the media was all of the media was taken into context, even though there'd already been plenty of questions before that in the press conference. And so we're in that situation where it was a fair question, because even if Steve Bruce could have come out and defended that as well, he could have said, yeah, well, I did, but also the players had some time off that weekend. We were back, he said, had trained every day in the week building up to the match, which they did, albeit some of the timings were moved around here and there. And it was a fair question, but did he expect not to be seen on a flight from, which was an economy style flight out to the Algarve, as if that wasn't going to be spotted by someone, and then therefore fans share that on social media and it gets talked about? And I think I don't see why it wasn't. He could have just answered that. To then lash out as if it's some sort of agenda against him, or as if it wasn't something which there was interest from supporters in. There is interest in supporters in. Unfortunately, the optics of it were terrible. He could have, there may be an argument, as people close to Bruce would say, that he needs a break because he didn't get what he wanted during the national break. He just needed to switch off for a few days. He didn't get what he wanted from the window. Fine, but come out and try and at least make that argument. Don't make it seem as if it's not a relevant question when your team is in the bottom three. You haven't won a game yet. You've been knocked out of the League Cup. Things are going wrong. He said that there was only, he said, well, six players, in part of his response, he talks about six players being away on a national duty. Yeah, but there was the other 19 in the squad were still around. So it's just, it doesn't quite, there's still that time you could have worked with them. So just explain, I mean, George and I have talked about this so much on the podcast. It's about language. It's about dealing with things. And again, he's the only person who's having to answer questions. And on Friday in his pre-match press conference, he was asked a lot about the window, and he actually towed a line which I didn't think he would be able to, which was not, he didn't come out and make out as if he didn't want additions. He made it clear he had wanted further additions without actually calling out those above him. And clearly a lot of fans weren't particularly happy with what he said, but actually for him politically, he probably handled that quite well internally. because he still got his position across without really calling out those above him. But he was already irked during that press conference. He was a bit spiky at points in that. And then this was, as I explained in the piece that George mentioned, it basically felt like this rant almost as it came out of, was the pressure valve unleashing after...
That's it.
Just so long of everything building up after the window and the statement and then Friday and whatnot. And so, yeah, it was just bizarre.
Can I just be clear as well, Chris, and state for the record that the reason I'm pissed off with Newcastle United is nothing to do with anything that's ever been printed in the Chronicle. I just want to state that for the record to make sure that everyone's completely clear on that. Lee Ryder doesn't have that kind of sway over me. I make all of my own opinions up about the club. And the reason that I'm so pissed off with them at the minute is because we are absolute dog shit. And we are letting in goals left, right and centre, and we don't win games. And we've got an owner who doesn't care and a manager who doesn't seem to understand. So that's why I'm pissed off. It's nothing to do with the Chronicle. Just to be completely clear, Steve, you need to know that, okay? Anyway, I think we'll move on, eh? You mentioned banners, Chris, and the fans in the away end were already agitated at Old Trafford, but there was something very specific spotted in that away end, and it will ring true with listeners to the Athletic's Football Clichés podcast. Let's listen to a clip of the latest episode featuring host Adam Hurry and guest Phil Hay.
So we've had players getting annoyed. We've had managers under pressure. We've had an element of hierarchy involvement here. But you know who we've forgotten about so far, Phil? And that's the fans. Oh. The most important people in football, except for the other lot and the others.
And I have to say, there is no... I think the point of no return in any crisis as a football club is without doubt when people start writing on bed sheets. And The more squint the writing gets, the more ferocious you can tell that their anger is. And I honestly think once bedsheets start to appear either outside the ground or particularly in the away end, more than the home end, it's always the away end that does, you know, really does the damage. There's definitely no way back, ever.
Fantastic. So that's stage 9 of a club in crisis, apparently, is bedsheets. So if you want to hear all 13 stages, do check out the latest two episodes of Football Clichés. It's always great fun, that show. But it was remarkable coincidence for that coming up this week, and a little bit frightening as well. And it's only September, but are we not a club in crisis, chaps? The next three games are absolutely huge, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I'm so fucking annoyed that I wasn't asked to be on that show because, I mean, if anybody knows about clubs in crisis. And also, it's a load of bollocks. I mean, I love Phil Hay, but he's... I mean, if things written on bedsheets is a sign of the end, well, we've been living, you know, inside Armageddon for the last 14 years because it's not made a jot of difference up here.
You can't buy a bedsheet in Newcastle these days. No, you just kind of get
exactly.
them.
Exactly, they've all been used. They've all been used up. We're way beyond that point. I mean, but then again, Newcastle isn't logical. So maybe Newcastle are the exception that proves the rule. I don't know, but yeah, bedsheets. We've had bedsheets galore. It's made no difference whatsoever.
None at all. And as I was saying, Chris, the next three games are huge, aren't they? And Leeds at St James's Park on Friday night is potentially explosive for many, many reasons, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's. George was obviously there for the Southampton game, and we got a little bit of a hint of fans turning at certain points, but it wasn't a Friday night atmosphere as this will be. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of Leeds
straight
fans
straight out on a drink after work.
It's a huge game for Leeds as well. To be fair, I mean, Leeds haven't started very well, so it's both teams in one sense will be fancying this as a if you wanted an opposition at the minute to be able to go into and play against and think this could be our first win of the season. You would probably pick each other as that opposition other than Norwich in terms of who you'd want to play at the minute, because neither Leeds looked all over the place against Liverpool. They're conceding a lot of goals as well, but Newcastle's record against Leeds last season was very poor. They got absolutely hammered at Elland Road, so Leeds will be looking to replicate that. But given everything that's happened in the course of the last few weeks, given that Newcastle fans haven't yet seen a home game since the window closed and no further signings have arrived, given that Callum Wilson is not going to be playing, given that of what Steve Bruce has said over the last few days and the situation with him, and also given that there's talk that there may even be some sort of protests going on. I've seen stuff about whistles and paper airplanes, and who knows what exactly is going to happen. It sounds like it's going to be chaos on and off the field, and it could be really, really toxic. I mean, toxic's almost becoming, the toxic atmosphere has almost become cliched around Newcastle United.
It has, yeah.
We're talking about it so much, but equally, I think that's because the definition certainly will apply this Friday if Newcastle don't start well. Hopefully they'll start well and it won't need to turn that situation, but if they concede and concede early, then I do worry about what may happen afterwards.
One thing I would just say about that is that, I mean, I have all those same feelings and I'm building it up in my own head as well, and it feels like it's all there. And, you know, we know the way Leeds play or can play when they're doing well, and it's sort of, you know, they're absolutely ferocious and, you know, if Newcastle crumble, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I've always thought about St James's that sometimes it's those moments when you expect the crowd to do something that it doesn't happen. And I sometimes think it's almost like it's almost a sense of not wanting to do the big meltdown when everybody's watching and expecting it, that there's a reaction to the reaction, you know, and whether it's because, well, we're on television and, you know, we don't want to be kind of falling apart in front of everybody, whether it's the fact that, you know, Leeds will, you know, guarantee a good atmosphere in the away end, and I mean, hopefully not inside the home fans as well, but I'm a bit fearful about that too because of ticket sales and so on and so forth. You know, I do sort of wonder whether there's almost that collective decision that protest can wait another day. But I'm only saying that because I think it's happened in the past sometimes, and then it's the occasion when you don't expect it that suddenly it kind of ignites like that. But from here, at the time of, you know, at the time of recording, it feels to me like we're building to something, and it's all set up to be a, you know, really ferocious atmosphere. Then again, Newcastle scored in the fifth minute and going from, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Well, that's what frustrated me about some of the stuff that sort of maybe emanates from the club, and I understand and from Bruce to a certain extent, I understand why the club feels, I know that they feel that everything's negative out there about them, and that's because most things that they do is stupid or has been incorrect in my view, so therefore I think that it's warranted. But equally, even if they think it goes beyond it, what I do take exception to is this idea that we would not want the club to win matches. It's the club that we are all invested in so much.
God, no.
Supporters want it. We desperate. If Newcastle were to win 4-0 on Friday night, then that would be absolutely superb. That's what every single person who has an association with the club wants. Nobody is going to bat an eyelid and suddenly think, oh no, it's terrible that they've gone and won that game. That's what we want to see. But it's just that the reason that we keep highlighting all these issues is because that they are issues, and they're a lot of them are long-standing issues, a lot of them are recent issues, and that we want to see the club improve, we want to see it get better, and that is why we are, I would say a critical friend, but I don't think we're necessarily friends. I think that it's quite as amicable as that, but that's what I like to believe that the local media should be, that there should be a sort of critical friend in terms of they want the club to do well, but equally they're there to hold them to account, and that's what I like to think that the local media has done in recent months and years, and that's why I thought that the Bruce's outburst was so uncalled for.
A successful club has successful relationships within it, and you can sort of always you can narrow those down to, you know, the individual parts, with, you know, the hierarchy, the management, the players, the fans, and it feels like there's very little connection between any of those parts of the club at the moment. So in other words, you know, when the team are doing well, the manager's happy, fans are happy, the hierarchy are happy, everyone's working together. You know, you can make the same kind of points during those moments, whether it's transfer windows and all that kind of stuff. The things that we've sort of seen in the last couple of weeks is a schism. It's either well established or developing further. So we've seen that kind of, you know, the schism between Steve Bruce and the club, and certainly in terms of, I mean, they might dispute that, but in terms of transfers, and, you know, we saw this, you know, that remarkable statement, not signed, but in which, you know, it feels like Steve Bruce is being slapped down a bit. And, you know, even after the match on Saturday, people saying, you know, talking about players trying to swap shirts with a footballer who I won't mention by name, and so on and so forth. And
Voldemort.
It's just really, it's kind of really damaging that. So it's like everybody is has kind of withdrawn to their own corner, and are sniping at each other, and that is a equation that only ends in one way. And you know, it's I'm sure it's too late for Steve Bruce to sort of to mend his relationship with fans, but at the same time, the one thing that has kept Newcastle kind of going in the past, I mean, I'm not in a way that's been glorious or anything, but when Alan Pardew, for example, lost the crowd, and he did lose the crowd, he lost the crowd in a manner that you knew couldn't be repaired long term. I mean, he turned results, to his credit, results turned, and he kind of went back to basics and managed to kind of get results. And Newcastle were actually in a kind of decent position by the time he left of his own accord. But he left of his own accord because the relationship had gone. And you knew that once Newcastle lost two games in a row, that it would go, you know, that it would explode again. And you can't rebuild that relationship, I don't think. I mean, you know, not unless you suddenly go on a kind of... Anyway, I mean, it's not going to happen. It's pointless talking about that. But the damaging thing is, if he doesn't have that internal support either, or that internal support has weakened, then, you know, you're looking at this sort of club of just completely disparate parts, either stuck with each other, and sort of muddling through, and as I say, it only ends in one place. That
this episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's move on briefly here. With regards to injuries and fitness, we talked about Callum Wilson earlier, Chris, and how much we missed him at Old Trafford. But what's really worrying to a lot of fans is that he may now be out for a month, maybe even 6 weeks, as reported by you. What's the latest line on that, Chris?
Well, this was a bit which I contributed to in David Ornstein's column on The Athletic. He does a weekly Monday column, which also always has some very interesting stuff. There's something in there about... sort of COVID companions, I'm going to call them as well, which may sort of solve the Miguel Almiron controversy with all the other South American players who only just were able to play at the weekend, having not travelled to red list countries. But it looks like that they're trying to find any route to be able to keep them for either stop them from playing in the next international break or to make sure that they will be able to travel and then play for their clubs without quarantine. But anyway, on Wilson itself, so both David Ornstein and I checked this out separately, and the understanding is that Wilson, when he first suffered this injury, or at least when post Southampton, because I think he tweaked it already, post Southampton, obviously he scored against Southampton and that was after he'd already tweaked the thigh during the first half. Continued, I think he came off after about 69 minutes, and there has been no timescale given by Newcastle United. Steve Bruce didn't want to put a timescale on it on Friday, but I understand is that it was sort of a 6-week diagnosis from when it happened. It was the initial prognosis, so that would take him through to the middle of the next international break, which would suggest that, I mean, he's not going to be available for Leeds, but would suggest he's not going to be available for the back-to-back away games at Watford and Wolves either, which means that Newcastle are going to have to try and navigate the next few weeks probably without their top goal scorer from last season, and someone's already scored 2 goals for them this season, and that is a real concern given that Steve Bruce doesn't seem to trust Dwight Gayle as his first choice centre forward. He's also played Alan Saint-Maximin in that position, and it worked to a certain extent with the game plan at Man United on Saturday, but whether it would work long term, not necessarily sure. And then Joe Linton, obviously, I mean, when he played on Saturday, he was actually more of a left winger coming inside. It was a 5-4-1. I mean, he did come inside at points, but Steve Bruce himself has said he's not a centre forward, and already I think we're seeing the lack of options up front. Steve Bruce was asked about this during pre-season, and interestingly, given all his frustrations with the window, one thing he wasn't actually looking for necessarily was a forward. He wasn't pushing for a forward. What he wanted was a centre-back and a midfielder. I'm sure if he'd had unlimited funds and the ability to change the squad, he would have wanted further forward, but that wasn't what he was prioritising. He was prioritising the positions. But we're already seeing how threadbare Newcastle's squad is in certain places, despite being a full 25-man squad.
The thing that frustrates me, Chris, about this is that you've got Well, I mean, is he a proven goal scorer? He's not. He's a goal scorer. You've got a striker sitting on the bench there, Dwight Gayle, who knows where the goal is. He scored goals in pre-season. He knows how to put the ball in the net if you get the ball to him. And with us playing in this style, the way we're playing with the counter-attack and flashing balls across the area and stuff like that, I just feel like we should have a striker there between the posts like we were talking about earlier on. And does Steve Bruce not trust Dwight Gayle to do a job for him at the minute, or is there something else going on there as the reason why he's not playing?
Well, he doesn't seem to trust him. I mean, we've had this over the last sort of 2 years, really, where he's kept on saying, I tried to sign Dwight Gayle. I think the number of times has changed during different press conferences, but he said anyway that he's tried to sign him on various different occasions previously. He talks about him scoring. I mean, in pre-season against Norwich, he scored 2 very good goals.
He did.
And yet he hasn't been the one who's been turned to. When Wilson has come off during the early matches, he has brought Joe Linton on as a centre-forward, even though he said he isn't a centre-forward. We didn't see much of Dwight Gayle, certainly even starting capacity throughout the end of last season. Yes, he only scored 1 goal last season, and I don't think he scored. I think it's about 19 appearances now. But equally, it's not like he's starting week in, week out, and you can really give him a run on that front. But he was given a 3-year contract by the club. Whether that was Steve Bruce's decision, I question whether he was the one who certainly pushed for that. I think that part of the squad, this is more of a general point rather than just about Dwight Gayle. I think if Bruce had been given the opportunity to, he probably would have refreshed certain areas of the squad where contracts have been handed out for players, and he would have rather brought in younger and alternative options there, ones who he'd signed. But that hasn't happened. This is the squad that he now has to deal with. And we, not only is Callum Wilson highly unlikely to play against Leeds. We don't expect him to play against Leeds. There were 3 injuries from the weekend. So Javier Manquillo went off with a knock. So did Kieran Clarke. So did Joe Willock. We don't know the extent of those problems. And particularly Willock, who was the only player Newcastle signed in the summer. Obviously, he was already here the second half of last season. But if they don't have Joe Willock, don't expect John Joe Shelvey to be back either. So therefore, you're already looking very, very light in midfield as well. And so we've got to just hope that those injuries aren't serious and those players are available for Friday as well.
I don't need to add too much to that, except to say that, you know, doesn't this also highlight the sort of dysfunction that there is at the club? That, you know, Dwight Gayle's not played a minute in the Premier League this season. So, and, you know, at a time when Newcastle are crying out for somebody to get them back into games, you know, get them back into a game or to win them a game or to recover, that, you know, the one goal scorer that they have, once you take Wilson out of it, isn't getting a look in, and yet he's contracted to the club until 2024. I mean, I think we all understand the context around the club and lack of money and stuff like that, but it's just it's just unbelievable, really, isn't it? Well, no, it's not. It is very believable.
It's absolutely believable, George.
It's just annoying.
It's expected, though, isn't it? Anyway, time for one question quickly from the floor before we adjourn for another week. This is coming in from the real-time feed on the Athletic app. Corey H. has asked, what is the point in having a third-choice goalkeeper if in the event that goalkeeper one and two go down, you choose to play someone who you would have otherwise sent out on loan? Chris, what do we think?
Well, I sort of touched upon this in another piece of the Athletic about the Newcastle's confirmed 25-man squad, which has four goalkeepers in it, which Steve Bruce described it would have been unprecedented the other week, and actually it's not, because Liverpool have four goalkeepers this year, and Chelsea did name Petr Cech as a fourth goalkeeper last year, even though he'd retired. But the difference in the situations was that Liverpool and Chelsea had quite a few players under the age of 21 who were basically first team regulars, and so they didn't need to name 25 senior players above that age, and so had the luxury of being. I mean, Petr Cech wasn't even receiving a playing salary; he was receiving a salary for his technical director or something at Chelsea. I don't know exact rule, but at Newcastle, it affected transfer business this summer. It prevented Steve Bruce needed to create extra room in the squad to be able to accommodate four goalkeepers, and that's part of the reason why they didn't have any room to bring anyone else in. But as we already touched upon with Freddie Woodman earlier, if Woodman gets dropped either this week or in the next couple of weeks, then he's going to be basically sat on the bench or even out the squad once Dubravka returns between now and January. So he's not going to play. He's going to get frustrated by that. If Darlow was so close to a return, then why wasn't Woodman able to go out on loan? But it also says a lot about Mark Gillespie. I mentioned this in the piece, and this is Mark Gillespie was brought in a free transfer during the summer of 2020, and he's a third choice goalkeeper. There was a situation last year, I think it was against Man United, where Darlow was injured and was basically limping around for parts of the game, and Bruce did not bring on Mark Gillespie. He didn't play him in any of the games towards the end of last season, the ones where Newcastle were already safe and they were never going to go down. He hasn't yet turned to his third choice goalkeeper, and at the moment his third choice goalkeeper is technically fourth choice goalkeeper, just Dubravka's injured, and it just makes you wonder
why did we sign him, as
Corey says. Yeah, what is the point in a third choice goalkeeper if you're not going to trust him in that situation? Because what could have happened is, if Darlow is going to be back in the next week or two, or short term as it seems that he is, then you could have had Gillespie potentially playing, and then you've got, during pre-season, Dan Langley played the first few games of pre-season because there's no other goalkeepers. So, in theory, you do have goalkeepers there, but I think it says quite a lot about the trust that Steve Bruce has in those. And it's a very valid question from Corey, and it almost feels like, what's the point in having him in the squad if you really don't trust him in those situations?
Absolutely. Well, let's finish up for the day, lads. Reasons to be cheerful? Do we have any at the moment?
Let's give it a go. Reasons to be cheerful. Well, unfortunately, he may be injured for Friday, but if he isn't, then Javier Manquillo, I think, is a reason to be cheerful. I thought that he looked very good. I thought it's a bit strange he's been overlooked the first part of the season anyway, as much as Jacob Murphy has brought forth in an attacking sense. I know that Manquillo missed a large part of pre-season, but equally, I just think he's been very consistent after having arrived as a bit of a joke figure at Newcastle. I think in the sort of last 6 to 12 months of Rafa Benitez's time at the club, and then, to be fair, through quite a bit of Steve Bruce's time, whenever he's played, he's probably been one of the more consistent performers, and I thought he did well. He took his goal excellently, and so if they're not going to have Callum Wilson, it would be helpful to have someone who can finish like that. So I'm going to go for Javi Manquillo, which seems like a bit of a stretch, I'll give you, seeing as he's a right wing back who might not even play on Friday, but that is my offering.
95 yards he ran to get on the end of that ball. A lung busting run. George, how about you? Anything? Demba Ba's just announced his retirement on Twitter, George. Did you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I can't.
That's not a reason to be cheerful, is it? But we've got some good memories of that man, though, haven't we?
Well, we didn't. I mean, to echo what you said earlier, we have got through the entire podcast without mentioning Ronaldo.
Oh, fuck. Oh, George! Fuck's sake.
Sorry.
What a silly sausage you are. Well, from my point of view, it's not a reason to be cheerful, but I must say a big get well soon to my little boy Jackson, who unfortunately had a little bit of an accident while playing for his team Jarrow Falcons on Saturday morning at Farringdon in Sunderland. He ran headfirst into the metal perimeter fence and cut his head open and ended up in A&E for a couple of hours on Saturday morning, bless him. They've glued it all back together, his head that is, and he's completely fine. He's getting better, but I have to say he was such a brave lad. Not a single tear was shed. George, if that was you, you would still be crying. No.
He wasn't pretending to be Miguel Almirón, was he?
He chased down a lost cause. That's exactly what he was doing. He chased after the ball, tried to keep it in, lost his foot, and then went headfirst into the fence. But he did get a lovely little message off his hero, Mr. Alan Shearer, to say, get well soon. I hope he's okay. So that was really nice. So get well soon, Jackson. I hope you're all right, mate. Anyway, right. That's it. We'll be back next week and we'll brighten your digital doorsteps once again with tales of merriment and mirth from Newcastle United FC.
Well, that's the one thing we won't be doing, but yeah.
Not okay. Merriment, definitely not.
No. Tune in anyway, but yeah, I'm sorry, but again, training standards and all that. I mean, we have to be a little bit accurate.
We do, you're right. Anyway, cheers, Chris. Thanks a lot. Thanks, George. And thanks everyone at home for sticking with us through it all. Take care of yourselves. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.
The Athletic.